The eighth meeting of our 87th session for education reform will come to order. Do we have a quorum? I think we do. Okay. Representative Barrett, have you looked at the minutes?
I have.
Will you move them, please?
The approval of
Representative Barrett moves the minutes from January 27th. Is there any discussion, corrections, additions? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say no. The minutes are adopted. Today, members, we continue with our look at how we can raise achievement, how we can improve teaching, and how we can empower parents. And our presentation today is on the data systems for the 21st century. We'll start with Kathy Wagner from the Department of Education and follow that with Amy Gadara, who is from Data Quality and is their executive director. So welcome, Ms. Wagner. She has a very interesting PowerPoint to share with us. And Jesse Montano is also in the audience today. She is back at the department, and we're glad to have her. So please identify yourself for the record, Ms. Wagner, and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kathy Wagner. Good morning, members. I am the Director for Information Technology at the Department of Education. And I'm going to talk to you this morning about a data grant that we received from the Institute of Education Sciences. It's actually the second grant that we received. Our first grant was in 2006 for $3.3 million. This grant was officially awarded to us July 1st of this year for $12.4 million. So we got quite a bump in money this time around. And we had three large system goals that we envisioned as a way to transform our data systems in this state. So I'm going to talk about those. And from those three large system goals, we actually have envisioned seven specific tactical projects as deliverables over the next 3 years. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the goals that are driving us, some of the statutory drivers, and there are both state and federal statutes that are framing our vision. And then we'll talk specifically about what our deliverables are going to be over the next 7 years. And some of them are actually starting this coming winter. We're starting with our course catalog, so I have a couple of slides about that. So our vision actually builds upon our first grant, the funding that we got in 2006, where we started our K-12 longitudinal data system. And those efforts were pretty much restricted to internal MDE kinds of things. This time we're reaching out beyond just K-12. We're reaching out to P-20. So that includes preschool, it includes post-secondary, and we're looking at some data exchanges with DEED, workforce data. So when fully implemented, our system improvements will hopefully transition Minnesota's education data capacity to something that we call interoperable. That means we can exchange data across data sets for analysis. We want to have solid data sharing connections. Our data sharing connections, of course, are K-12, they're early learning, Office of Higher Ed, and labor. And we want to use these data to primarily inform practice and policy. So that's our vision. We had three system goals, as I mentioned before, three targets that we wanted to focus on. And the first thing that we know to get this vision enacted, we need to do is to upgrade our current MDE data collection systems. We have, in some cases, data systems that are as old as 1970, and I actually do have some electronics from that era. I still have Bose speakers. I always feel compelled to confess. But really, we should not be hanging on to electronics for as long as some of us do. And we have some really old systems that, as I think is common in state government, it's an infrastructure piece, and unless you get some targeted funding, often it's very difficult to do the upgrades that are needed. So we're going to use funding from this grant to update basic student data collection systems. Our vision is that districts will report linkable student, teacher, and organization information through new web-based systems, and we'll house all this data in our existing K-12 longitudinal data system. So we have a longitudinal warehouse at MDE. Our second goal is to create another data warehouse. Now, the data warehouse that we made with our first grant focused on K-12 data. The second data warehouse is going to be expanded out. So it's not going to be our operational data warehouse at K-12. It's a second data warehouse, and it will be populated with some data from K-12, some data from higher ed, and hopefully some data from the workforce. And then our third improvement goal is to improve our analytics. And we take a lot of, I think, justifiable criticism for the way we display data on our public website. We have a lot of data. Many state agencies, we have a very robust data collection. We really need to upgrade the way we display our data. We're hoping to use a business intelligence tool called Web Focus that we purchased with our first grant. And that, and you'll see that explained or alluded to in some of our project deliverables. But we want to upgrade the way we provide data for analysis for both K-12 and for P-20 data. So we'll have some new data analytics for MDE, and we'll have some new data analytics for the P-20 warehouse. So three system goals. And this particular slide shows how we're going to be integrating our system goals with our existing products. So if I start at the bottom, the arrows here in the little boxes actually have meaning. Okay, the first row, A, that's our system goal A, which was to upgrade our existing data collections at MDE. So we've got a base infrastructure that we're going to be upgrading, and we've got a real interesting pilot project that we are going to be working on with probably 60 to 80 school districts across the state for easing data collection. We want to upgrade our student collection, we want to upgrade our staff collection, and upgrade our organization collection. So we'll have three retooled data collection sets, and those are new products because those are in blue. Those data collection systems are going to feed the goals that we had for creating a P20 warehouse. And you see we have a couple data sets in white. Post-secondary data will come from the Office of Higher Ed, and workforce data will come from DEED. So all the data from student, staff, organization, Office of Higher Ed, and DEED will go into a couple of warehouses. Our K-12 data, of course, will continue to go into our MDE warehouse. That box is white because that's one we built with our first data grant. But our new warehouse, the SLEDS, which is called, we had to have an acronym, of course, so SLEDS stands for Statewide Longitudinal Education Data System. So we will have some elements from student, staff, and organization, and some from higher ed, and some from DEED in that warehouse. And then our final products, which align to our third system goal, will be expanded analytics. So from the K-12 side of the house, we have something called the Educator Portal, and that's a password-protected website where districts can go in and get personally identifiable data, but only on students that they have enrolled at their district. You have to have permission to get into the website, so somebody has to say you are an employee of a particular district, and you have to have a job-related reason to be in there looking at the data. Once we sort that out, then you have to have a unique user ID and password. And we use something called Oracle Identity Management to allow users to come into our system. So it's an industry standard identity management system that we use. It's called Single Sign-On. Anyway, we will have data in there, more data in the educator portal for K-12 educators, and we will use that same Single Sign-On identity management product to protect the research data. And I've got couple more slides about each of these. The one thing to note about the research data set is that we're only going to be having anonymized data in that product 5, the SLEDS warehouse. So while in an operational warehouse for K-12, we need to know who the kids are because we need to connect, we need to get data for funding for various reasons, but we do know who the kids are. When we move data over to the research warehouse, we're going to do something called de-identification. We're going to strip the identifying information off, and we're going to put an anonymous identifier on. So we're going to have an additional layer of privacy and security protection when we get to the research warehouse. So we have seven products.
Excuse me, Ms. Wagner, Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask a question on that. If you're keeping it to the P12, what about that link between P12 and higher ed, where the information to higher ed would be helpful to know the that high school information?
Ms. Wagner.
Representative McFarland, Madam Chair. We want to do a rather sophisticated linking process in Product 5, the SLED's warehouse, but we need to maintain privacy so that we can get various agencies contributing their data. So we will have a unique identifier for a student within that warehouse that we will attach data from Office of Higher Ed and DEED and K-12, but we're never going to have my name, for example, in there. And it won't be my MARS ID. It won't be my University of Minnesota ID. It wouldn't be my Social Security number. So we've got we have a industry standard kind of a process that we'll do there. But and that's a really good question, because there's a lot of concern when you start combining data across agencies, how you're going to protect the integrity of the elements. So we've thought a lot about that.
Thank you, Ms. Wagner. Please proceed.
Thank you. So policy drivers. We have a lot of policy drivers here that got us to this point. Two state laws and some federal legislation. I have briefly pulled out the salient features here, so you're not going to see the full text of any of these. MS 120B35, Student Academic Achievement and Growth, is a key driver. Also, Session Law from 2009, implementing rigorous coursework measures related to student performance. And then at the federal level, the America Competes Act is very prescriptive and specific. So let's take a look at the state law first, 120B35. In July of 2011, and for us, that means the state fiscal year 12 reporting cycle. So any of our statistics, our education statistics that we would report out for state fiscal year 12. So that would include assessment results, growth results, graduation statistics, enrollment files. With that cycle, we have to report two core measures indicating the extent to which high school graduates are prepared for post-secondary and career opportunities. So we've got two what's on this slide. The first one is a preparation measure. This is a count data, so this is pretty easy to do. We need to get data in and count it and then display it. We need to indicate the number and percentage of high school graduates in the most recent year who completed coursework important to preparing them for post-secondary, academic, and career opportunities consistent with core academic subjects. We have a group at the department, the College and Career Readiness Policy Indicator Support. I think that's the right title. Anyway, it's a College and Career Readiness Group that is working with us to identify which courses we'd be counting. And we have some additional data that's going to come in through our student, staff, and organizational products through a project called the Course Catalog, and I've got several slides on that. So we'll be collecting some new data this year to be able to meet this statute. We also have to have a rigorous coursework measure indicating the number and percentage of high school graduates in the most recent year who successfully completed one or more college-level AP, IB, PSEO, or industry certification programs. And again, that data will come in through the Course Catalog project. How are we going to do this? Well, this is pretty standard analysis in the first bullet. We have to analyze and report categories of information using the nine categories, so that's race, ethnicity, and gender. Data privacy, so we're going to talk about that again. Summary data under this paragraph are separate from and must not be used for any purpose related to measuring or evaluating the performance of classroom teachers. So even though we're collecting granular level data at the state level, the state isn't, according to the statute, going to get into the business of evaluating individual classroom teachers. We will provide data that districts can use if they want to be able to do this. And in fact, many districts already collect data to be able to do, actually, I shouldn't say many, some districts, some larger districts in the state collect data to do this kind of analysis. With the state collection, we're going to start leveling the playing field and allowing all districts to have access to what I think is a real important data set. The commissioner, in consultation with qualified experts on student engagement, must identify highly reliable variables that will generate the summary data. So again, we're going to be picking which courses out of the course catalog project we're going to be counting and reporting for this. And then any data received or collected or created that are used to generate summary data are non-public. So we won't be releasing the identity of teachers with what courses they've taught under this project. So, and it's important to note that at the department we have a long history of collecting private data on individual kids for various reasons, and we have lots of data practices, processes, procedures, rules, statutes around how we release and disclose this data. Basically, we don't. We only give it to people who have a job-related need to see it.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This, in the talk you've just given about this slide and the one previous, are we going to be able to look back at a student's course of study then and make a decision about later success? You know, in the past, we've not really been able to do that, and when we talk about it, it was always we didn't have the correct data, and it sounds like now we're going to have that. And you talked about measuring IB, AP. There are many districts in this state, some of the smaller ones, who can't offer any of those because of their location or their student size or population or what have you. Will we be able then to judge whether those schools are still producing high-quality students despite the fact that they may not have access to that and be able to look at that a little better?
Ms. Wagner.
Madam Chair, Representative Driscoll. Yeah, I think we will provide a baseline set of data about which kids took which courses in high school. We are asking districts right now, and I'm getting ahead of myself on the slides a little bit to answer your question, but we're asking districts right now to map to what we call a master state index. And so by doing that course mapping, we'll be able to find out what kinds of biology courses kids are taking, what kinds of math courses kids are taking, if they're taking IB or something that you might consider equivalent. So, yeah, I think we'll have the data to start to analyze the kinds of issues that you're raising.
Okay, and Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Norton.
Thank you. One of the issues I've had when we kept talking about the rigorous coursework will produce outcomes, and we know that kids who take those courses do well in college, to be careful that if we're going to start making a judgment about how well a school does based on only the opportunity to offer those options, that we were doing a disservice to many schools in this state. So I really appreciate that it's long overdue, and you know, that's really exciting. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative. Yes, we saw this statute and we couldn't figure out, what's going to be important. Is IB, AP, those are clear, but what about Tech Prep? What about Carl Perkins? So we wanted to have a real range of things out there so that we could get a full data set and not be automatically restrictive up front. So,
Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair, and I'm very interested in the early childhood. And I'm wondering, are you going to have a way of identifying, are they going to have MARS numbers from beginning so that we can follow, at least we have some idea about students being ready for kindergarten and what are the programs that are successful and that whole area is very complex, I think, and I don't know, have you done very much work on it? Do we have a means of identification? Where are we with the preschool
Ms.
area
Wagner.
Of this?
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, early learning is one of the focuses of this work, and we are just starting. In fact, we had a meeting yesterday, and we're having another one this afternoon. We need to identify what groups of kids we will target for inclusion in this system. So Head Start is one of the groups that we're looking at right now, but I think we're going to try to broaden out. We aren't very far with that. We're looking at data sharing agreements right now with Head Start to get individual student data back into our longitudinal data system. To your other question, we do have we will have the technical ability to assign them state IDs at an early age. So Head Start, kids that participate in Head Start, it won't be a technical issue that we can't assign them an ID after about 18 months here. It will be a policy decision about whether we want to can work out the data sharing agreements and for what purposes we would use those data. So we we have a couple groups that are very interested in this and kind of solving these issues with which groups to target and how to get the data into the system, how to craft the policies to allow us to do that. So we're starting, I guess, is the answer.
Ms. Wagner, please continue.
Thank you. I'm on to session law, Chapter 26, Article 2, from 2009. This is pretty similar to the last one we looked at. Again, school report cards beginning in 2011. This particular one wants us to develop a model projecting anticipated performance of each high school on preparation and rigorous coursework measures to compare schools. The work on this has been delayed because we don't have the course catalog data collection yet. This is our first year collecting it, and they have some models. There's a working group, the College and Career Readiness people have convened a group, but I think they're delaying it because of the availability of the data. And I think with something like this, we've got to get data in and do a lot of kind of projection work before we go statewide. So I think they need some more time to be working on this.
Representative Detke, is your question to this point?
Yeah.
Representative Detke.
Thank you very much. It's to the point of collecting data and how kids are ready for college, and I believe that that's this particular area. Last week we heard testimony from the Minnesota, the MINSCU system, and our colleges throughout the state as far as remedial costs and also percentage of students from whether it's Edina or wherever. Edina had about 20% of their students going to university. Colleges, Minnesota colleges, needed remediation. And we talked a little bit about linking, Representative McFarland did, linking that high school college. Is there any effort or do you see any concerns on your part with collecting data that would give parents and community members tools to really analyze the students from which high schools or school systems are not prepared or have the highest number of remediation? I was shocked that even Edina had a 16% remediation. Is that on your radar screen at all to link that?
Ms. Wagner.
Representative Detke. Yes, it is on our radar. That's the SLED's warehouse, and we are working right now with the Office of Higher Education as sort of the data broker. They get data from the University of Minnesota and MINSCU as well as private colleges. So they're working on redisclosure agreements with the private colleges. This was a project actually that was had a lot of traction under the previous administration with the P20 Council. So we have actually identified a set of seed data elements that will go into the SLED's warehouse, and there's some things from K-12, there's some things from the Office of Higher Ed. I've got a slide a little bit later about a governance group. There's a governing body that's made up of heads of institutions. For example, President Brunix was chairing the committee with our previous commissioner, Commissioner Segrin. We've had the head of MINSCU, Chancellor, was there. A variety of institutional heads. And we are identifying which data elements in particular would be needed to do that kind of research. So it is very much on our radar.
Representative Detke.
Thank you, and thank you, Madam Chair.
Ms. Wagner.
So this is the federal legislation, the America Competes Act. And as far as federal legislation goes, this is the first time I've seen legislation prescribe to states what data elements we would need to have in a state data system and what the capacity of a state data system is. So this is very new in terms of federal education legislation. The America Competes Act talks about 12 required data elements. We have anything that's in black, we have and have had for quite a while. The elements that are in brown are elements that we're working on with the longitudinal data system funding. So we do have a unique student identifier. That's our MARS number. We do have student-level enrollment and demographic data. We do know at the state level where kids exit, transfer, drop out from. We're able to calculate pretty granular level graduation rates. With the new grant, we're going to be working on continuation to post-secondary information. So that's the data that the data sharing agreements that we're working on with the Office of Higher Ed. The ability to communicate with post-secondary data systems is really related to the second half of 3, so again, that's the OHE work. We have data audit systems, yearly individual test records, information on kids not tested by grade and subject. We've had that stuff for a long time. We have had part of 8, but we are working on the second half. The teacher identifier is the file folder number, and it's a real accurate number, so we're pretty far ahead of a lot of states. What we haven't had is an ability to connect our teachers to our kids. So we are working on a new data model that envisions the 3 main pillars of education data, which are students. So we have we're looking at upgrading our student system, our staff system. So we're looking at licensure and staff data coming in a better data collection and organization. So we would be able to connect teachers to students through the courses that they teach and the section number at the particular organization. And I have a data model slide to show you a little bit later. We'll be collecting selected transcript elements. Now, I'm a longtime teacher before I had this particular life, and so when I think of a transcript, I think about going into a file room and getting a CUME folder out. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about some selected transcript elements with the course and the grade, and that's probably about it. We'll have information whether the course was completed or not. But when I've talked to districts about this, they're excited because we'll be able to provide a lookup. So when new students enroll, we won't be able to give them the CUME folder because we don't have that. But we will be able to say, here's the course history based on some normalized indexed kind of information about courses. So you'll be able to know whether the kids had biology. You'll be able to know what algebra classes the kid has had. Student-level college readiness test scores, we have some of that with our EPASS system. We're getting more of that with data sharing agreements with ACT and the College Board. Data on transitions to secondary and post-secondary, including information on remedial coursework. That was to, I think, Representative Debke's question earlier. And additional data necessary to address preparation and alignment for student success.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering, since this is federally required, if I'm down at number 3, mm-hmm. One of the challenges I know in some districts in Minnesota that experience high mobility, I've also heard it, student mobility, I've also heard it from districts in other parts of the country, they get dinged at having a high dropout rate when a student moves out of state, mm-hmm. and the state data system does not allow tracking of that individual. So all the school can report is, well, they were here at the beginning of the year and they're gone now and we don't know what happened. Will this allow us to track across state lines so we can say that Johnny moved from Waconia to Walla Walla, but he graduated?
Ms. Wagner.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney. We do have a couple projects in the works to address some of that. We have one small project with a consortium of Midwest states where we're going to be piloting something called a student locator. So we're going to be just seeing if we can find kids that show up in our system as unknown. That would be the category. We will be trying to figure out if they show up in, I think it's Nebraska, Iowa, North and South Dakota. Data system. So we have a pilot going there. We also have talked about purchasing data from the National Student Clearinghouse, which will allow us to know if kids show up in colleges outside of Minnesota, colleges that wouldn't be part of our Office of Higher Ed. But that's a data purchasing scenario, so we have to kind of explore that and see if we get ourselves set up for an expensive annual data purchase down the road. But we have two ways to consider that and look at that. And I think the neighboring state data sharing is a real viable option because I think most kids probably are going to be going to some place that's a little bit closer to home. Not all, but mm-hmm. but a lot of them.
Thank you.
Ms. Wagner, since this is federal, is there money attached to it?
Madam Chair, the money is the $12 million data grant.
Okay.
So that's a significant amount of funding. But to your point, Once we're done with that data grant, the products that we will be maintaining, the seven products, will have to be maintained through state general funds. Yeah.
Thank you, Ms. Wagner. Please continue. Representative Woodard has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question for you. A minute ago, you talked about the fact that this data cannot be used for teacher evaluation. And then on this slide, we've got that the teacher identifier will actually match the teachers to students. Can you explain why? You know, I understand there's a federal versus state issue here, right. But what purpose will we be able to use the teacher identifier when we match it with students?
Ms. Wagner, it's Woodard.
I'm trying to see. Thank you. Chair, Representative Woodard. We will have the granular data capacity to do that. The way I'm looking at it is I don't know that we're authorized at the state level to do any individual teacher evaluation program. We will provide districts with that level of data so that they will have a full set of data for teachers connected to their courses. They'll have some state comparisons, so districts could engage in that. And we could do it, we just don't have statutory authority to do it.
Okay, thank you for the clarification. Thank you.
Ms. Wagner.
Okay, a couple more things on America Competes. These are sort of general functions that they want our data systems to be able to do. We need to correlate students' ability to successfully engage in and complete post-secondary level general education courses without the need for prior developmental work. So again, we're really hitting hard on that notion of post-secondary without required remediation. We want to identify factors to increase the percentage of low-income and minority students who are academically prepared to enter and successfully complete post-secondary general level education work. So that speaks directly to our closing the achievement gap in the state. And we want to use data in the system to otherwise inform education policy and practice. So some pretty broad principles here.
So Ms. Wagner, before we leave those two slides, to what extent will this data reflect whether or not a teacher or a department, let's say at the secondary level, is using high-quality curricula?
Madam Chair, we aren't collecting information about curriculum per se with this, but I think what this will do is give us some baseline data to start going in and doing curriculum reviews. If you've got kids who have a particular course-taking pattern that shows us predominant in the district, and you've got test scores that are showing a certain kind of achievement, it gives you a basis to go in and start saying, what kind of curriculum are you using? And it allows you to go and, with some of the comparative data that we're directed to publish, to go and find high-achieving districts and with particular course-taking patterns that might mirror your own and start honing in on perhaps better selection of comparisons. So it doesn't provide answers necessarily, but it gives us a really exciting data framework, I think, to work within to start exploring some questions.
And perhaps just aligning curriculum to the content standards will be probably more cohesive than it might be now.
Yeah, Madam Chair, absolutely. You'll see in a little bit, I've got a slide that has an example of what we're collecting on the course catalog file. And we are asking if standards are being taught in a course. We're not asking which particular standard. And that was at the advice of our advisory committee. We've actually been working on the course catalog project for about 2 years. And they advised us not first year out to ask which standard. And the reason is that there's not necessarily a one-to-one correspondence between a standard and a course. You could embed a standard across multiple courses. That being said, we'll still get information as to which courses are standard-bearing courses. So,
how about, Ms. Wagner, benchmarks for the standards? Will you have any ability to track whether the curriculum is supporting the particular benchmarks that are delineated within the academic standards?
Madam Chair, we could. It's not a technical issue.
Okay.
If someone was to direct us to collect that, we could. I always, when I talk to districts, I say this is only three new files, and I get sighs and groans.
I can imagine.
But I think we need to work with our districts to get them used to a new data collection, get them comfortable with it, let the collection mature, and then we can add things as appropriate. But, yeah, I mean, if that was something that was really important, we definitely can find a home for collecting benchmark information.
Well, in regard to testing, the benchmarks are important.
Absolutely.
Because that's what drives the test.
Absolutely.
Continue, please.
Thank you. All right, so what questions can an LDS answer? This is just sort of general here. Well, about students, we want to know what courses best prepare students for success, so we're poised to do that. With regard to teachers, we want to know how teachers can be most successful in improving student skills. So we really want to understand things about teacher preparation, staff development, course taking. For policies, which policies have the greatest impact on student achievement? Are they different for different student groups? Interventions. We have a lot of work that we're going to be doing with early warning indicator signs for dropout. We want to be able to track kids, allow districts to have web dashboards. Now, these are private, password-protected websites, again. But we want to be able to show kids that are at risk for identified indicators for early warning. So some of the indicators to date are poor attendance patterns, failing grades, not having sufficient credit-bearing courses. And those are all data that we will be able to get at, finally, with this new data collection. So our particular system projects, I talked about them earlier, but we're going to go into them in a little bit more detail. There are seven of them. One is a SIF project, if you've heard Patrick Plant talk in the past, a school interoperability framework. I'll talk a little bit about that. Serve staff, student, and org, those are our core data collections. Our P20 SLEDS data warehouse, that's our second data warehouse, and then our MDE analytics and our SLEDS analytics. So the SIF pilot is, SIF is, well, the techie slide here, the techie bullet. SIF is an international XML specification. XML means extensible markup language. What it really is, it's a file format that allows you to collect complicated hierarchical data. It allows you to show a hierarchy of relationships in the data, and it makes the data be more accurate when it's presented. So most student information vendors support SIF. They support XML. We have money in our grant to support a pilot with student data. So what this does is it allows data to, and we call this automagically flow, from your student information system up to the state. You don't have to hand enter data. You don't have to give us a data file. We can just hook up a SIF adapter and have the data get pushed right up to the state. Now, that also assumes that you have a fairly sophisticated district, and so we know we have a range of districts. We have some very small districts that struggle to hand-enter data. We have medium-sized districts, and it's appropriate for them because of their size to create a file. But we have very large districts where submitting files to us is burdensome. So we want to pilot the SIF project with large districts and vendors to see if we can get some traction on really, once and for all, easing the data submission burden. And I said we have about probably 60 to 80 districts that we'll put in that pilot. The next three, student, staff, and organization, we are upgrading our data collections, and our idea is to collect any given data element once and use it many times. We have a history of every program at the department, when they want data, we would have a new data collection system. And while that's makes good sense for programs, it's not such a user-friendly system for districts, because they end up perhaps submitting the same data element multiple times. So we've been in the process since our first data grant of shifting to what we call an enterprise data model, which is not the Star Trek TV show, which everybody thinks about if you're not a techie. But enterprise data model means that it's a data model that spans all of the divisions and all of the programs at the department. And so it's a big organizational shift in how you view data, and it's a long-term kind of a project. But that will allow us to collect data, and this is my last super techie slide, so I didn't know if there were techies in the room here or not.
Yes.
Okay. So what we're looking at for a data model is our three core pillars of data, our student data, staff data, and organization data. Those are the core pillars about what we do in education. That's our business. So we want to collect student data that has demographics, but the linking that everybody's talking about, students have course sections, they're enrolled in a school, they take tests, they have grades, so we want to be able to link that to organization. But if you go over to the organization bubble, you want to look at attributes about an organization. They have finance, they have school enrollment, they also have students, they have assignments, they have courses. So we really want to be able to look at this more as a kind of a tinker toy kind of a model, rather than having to get all of the data for the courses in one collection and then not be able to link the student and the staff data. So we want to be able to take a student file, a staff file, and an index file and relate them. All right. New data for our warehouse. This is our project that we are actually starting training on in about 2 weeks, the Minnesota Common Course Catalog. Got some high points for you about that. It's a universal index of all possible courses that might be taught in schools K-12, taught in schools across the state. Our first phase is K-12, and that's the 10-11 school year. Our second phase, which we think will be 11-12, is P-8. The core issue at K-12 is the breadth of courses. So we have spent a couple years capturing the breadth of courses. The issue at P-8 is not the breadth of courses. Every third grader, I hope, takes reading and math instruction. But what we're interested in the elementary is the instructional delivery style. Do they have push-in programs? Do they have pull-out programs? What kind of supports do they have? The teacher of record is a real critical kind of data element to understand. Who's the teacher responsible for assigning the grade? And that becomes more problematic to clearly understand that when you go down the grade. So we made an arbitrary split because we have kind of conceptual unity of what's happening at the 9-12. And at middle schools are kind of a hybrid. They look a little bit like 9-12s, but they start looking more like K-6s, and as you go down, you've got really a different sort of set of issues. So we've started work on that. We have models. This project will not change what local districts offer, and I think that's one of the biggest confusing points when we talk to districts. We're not going in with a statewide curriculum at all. This is an index that they will map their local course offerings to and allow us to look at course offerings across the state in what we call in the techie land a more normalized fashion. So we'll be looking at pre-algebra, and they'll map whatever they call pre-algebra locally, however they teach those skills in whatever course locally, they'll map to our algebra, our pre-algebra description. And it's only 3 files. So,
Ms. Wagner, yes. Who's going to input all of this at the local level?
Madam Chair, we are working with teams. So we have a data manager and we say curriculum person, okay, or sometimes a guidance counselor, the person who knows the most about the courses that are offered. We've actually indexed probably 40 to 60 high schools so far. The teams have told us it's a couple-hour project to do the indexing. Now, that being said, we've got 101 training, which is an overview of what the course catalog is. We have 102 training, which is specifically do your indexing. And then we have 103 training, which is on the data file submissions. But the process hasn't been onerous once we get people understanding what it is. But the trick there is you don't want your data manager doing the mapping because they don't understand the subtleties of curriculum, but you want your curriculum people to know that they're not going to be the ones responsible for submitting the file formats. So it's really a team effort.
Thank you.
Okay, research-based policy. The course catalog actually is based on research that was begun in 1982 through NAEP. NAEP was the first one to do a course catalog. Our current Minnesota model is based on the SCED model from the National Center of Education Statistics that is the current national course catalog. But we actually customized that to accommodate Minnesota education policy and local district course offerings. So we changed some of the titles to more reflect what we're seeing in districts in this state. We made sure that the language, whenever it didn't seem to fit our curriculum discussions locally. But in essence, it's the SCED model. And that's pretty standard across the country for states to take the National Center for Education Statistics model and work with it. What does it look like? We have 23 subject areas. The blue areas are the core. The green and red are electives, and we added academic and career development. That was not in the original SCED model, but we added that because we saw a lot of courses in that locally. So that's one of the customization features that we added. What the information looks like is shown in this slide. The first column in this table has the local course number, and that's just information for locals so that they can continue to have an understanding of the data they're submitting. This particular course locally is called Know Your Plants and Animals. So we get the local number. We have the local title. And that actually maps to biology, our biology description. Our biology description is probably 3 or 4 sentences. And we talk about a best fit. So the reason we're doing a lot of training is we want to get people comfortable with what's the best fit. So The academic level here is, in this particular course, is basic. The duration is trimester or trimester equivalent, and it's a sequence 2 of 3, and it addresses state standards. Here's another one, another example. This particular course is the Law and You. We have the local number, the local title. This best matches a description in our catalog called Legal System. It's a general academic level. The duration is a quarter. It's a standalone, so it's 1 of 1 in the sequence, and it does not address standards. So our next product is the P20 Warehouse, the SLEDS, the Statewide Longitudinal Education Data System.
Representative O'Driscoll, did your question pertain to what she was just talking about? Please ask it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for clarification, when you're talking about the local districts that are reporting, I assume that that also includes charter schools, it also includes faith-based schools or other private institutions. Does it also include homeschooling in any way or any requirement from that?
Ms. Wagner.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, we only have authorization to collect data from public schools. So charters are public school districts. Faith-based tend to be private schools, so they're not part of this. And homeschools are also not part of this. So.
Thank you.
Please continue. Oh, Representative Barrett, you have one pertaining to this, too?
I do not. I'd like to wait and
Thank
ask
you.
A question at the end.
Thank you.
So our P20 warehouse, SLEDS, we've talked a lot about that already, I think. It's an interagency data warehouse, and that's new for this state. We will have data from MDE, data from the Office of Higher Ed, and we're going to be housing it in the state data center, which is managed by Office of Enterprise Technology. So we thought the state data center was neutral territory, for one thing. Secondly, they have 24/7 security, and they are used to managing interagency data agreements, which can get a little bit tricky. They have something called service level agreements, which really details the what I call the behavior around data, who gets to access it, under what conditions, how much, what are the expiration dates on the data, those kind of things. SLEDS is going to leverage MDE expertise when we build it. So MDE is the lead agency. And we're going to combine, as we talked about before, selected data elements from existing collections as agreed upon by the P20 governing body. And I've got my next slide talks about that. So we have some K-12 elements, some OHE elements, DEET elements. We talked about no personally identifiable data in this warehouse, so we will de-identify the data through a process and link it into another anonymous ID, a SLEDS ID, if you will. And OET will develop service level agreements and ongoing operational technical support once this is done. So we probably will end up with an OET support fee for this warehouse when we're done with the grant. But that's the only piece, I think, that's hosted outside of MDE. So Minnesota Keys to Success for Governance. We have worked long and hard, I think, paving the road to being able to do some of this data sharing. We have, first of all, statutory authority that allows us to collect data in the first place. That allows us to collect data from public schools and districts. We have interagency data sharing agreements. We have one with the Office of Higher Ed, or actually two with the Office of Higher Ed. And then we have a P20 partnership support of interagency governance. And that, again, was started with the P20 Education Committee. And P20 actually has in their bylaws a governance structure that allows us to manage this warehouse. The governance structure looks like this. The P20 governing body has lead representatives from these agencies. So MDE, Office of Higher Ed, Higher Education Systems, DEED. We also have K-12 representation, business and citizens. We have a research committee. And these are PhD researchers who will be weighing in on what kinds of research projects we should be doing with these data. And then we have a data advisory committee so that we make sure that the questions that are being asked by the research committee can actually be supported by the data elements. And then we have various system coordinators supporting the efforts shown below. In particular, the P20 governing body will evaluate and consider research and evaluation topics. They'll approve requests for additional data elements that will be added. They'll approve data security protocols and data transfer procedures. The research committee will review and develop research and evaluation proposals, and the data advisory committee will review those same proposals through the lens of technical data expertise on structures and data linkages. Our analytics for both MDE and P20, we have a variety of analytic products that we've identified as deliverables with our grant. And I think they're a pretty interesting mix here. Teacher preparation information. This is something that we're working with our Board of Teaching at the department on. We will be providing a website with information about candidate-based competency pathways to licensure based on special permissions. So we're working, they're in the process of collecting some new data about these elements, and we'll be displaying that for them. The Bush Foundation is a 10-year project that I think is very interesting. They want our P8 collection to happen yesterday so they can do this, but they'll have to wait a year. They are looking at value-added information about teacher preparation institutions. What is the impact of teacher preparation institutions on preparing teachers who can go into the classroom and produce students with high achievement as measured by standardized test scores? So there's a lot of work being done in pockets around the country. Louisiana has been doing some of this work. I think Tennessee, I'm not sure, has been doing some of this work. But the Bush Foundation project is a 10-year project, and they have all of the major teacher preparation institutions in Minnesota on board with this. So we will be supplying them data. Early learning, we have a project specifically called out with early learning to identify the impact of early learning programs on K-12 and beyond. And our first challenge is to identify which early learning programs we want to target for data collections and get data sharing agreements going so we can collect those data. We're talking about whether we need statutes in place to allow us to collect data. So we're in the very embryonic phases of that, I guess. We want to understand the specific impact of course-taking patterns. I think this is real exciting for K-12. We will have summary-level data available for state-level analysis, and in our educator portal, we can provide district-level data, so if we do have support for specific analysis models, districts will be able to use their private data to work those models. We will have early warning dropout indicators, and we'll have at-risk indicators. At-risk indicators including attention, suspension, number of failing grades, lack of credit accumulation, or poor college readiness scores. And we're looking to have data on transition from school to workforce. So with our new business intelligence tool, we plan on running focus groups to see how the end users can best use data, making sure we've got data elements in that are useful, that kind of thing. So our next steps, we are completing our state contract process, which is always longer than anyone would think, but we're almost to the end of that. Our course catalog data collection is starting actually in June, but we are doing the training. I think our first training session is the third week in February. We are doing focus groups for expanded data collections. We will be doing data manager training because data managers can be sometimes can be overlooked in this. I mean, we say this is just three new files, but when districts say it's a burden, it's probably a burden because we haven't gone to the data managers, trained them, and given them some background information on why these data collections are important. So we're targeting that in particular. We want to have focus groups for expanded analytics, of course, the course catalog collection, and then the SIF pilot. So we're going to be busy in the next couple of years.
Thank you, Ms. Wagner. Representative Barrett, you have a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Wagner, I'm wondering, I have a couple questions, if I may. I know you've talked about certain things that this information will provide us, but can you just give me maybe a one or two sentence description of what is the overall goal of collecting all of this information from just a high-level area?
Ms. Wagner.
Barrett.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair. The high-level goal is we have been operating, I think, in education for a long time without some kind of performance data as a background. We have some tests, we have some enrollment data, but we really haven't been able to say, you know, does algebra really make a difference if we push it down into 7th and 8th grade? We think it does. We have some, selected pockets, but I think it's real important for Minnesota districts to see their own data in comparison to Minnesota schools if you really want to get into the grassroots and start affecting change. We talk a lot about transforming schools, closing the achievement gap, but I think we need some solid data to show teachers that this is a good direction to go, it's an appropriate direction to go. And this isn't meant to be punitive. So I've spent a lot of time talking about who gets to see data and under what conditions. We want to be real careful that we don't we don't message this as, you know, we're going to hold somebody up as an example of, you know, that's not the point. We've collected student data for a long time, so we really want to increase our research-based capacity, and we want to put actionable data into the hands of educators.
Representative Baird, follow up?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. Given that, you know, I think there are a lot of factors, variables that lead to a quality education for a child from pre-K through college. Two of which are critical is the involvement of the parents. Mm-hmm. I think we all agree, many of us agree that parents would be number one, mm-hmm. and two would be the quality of the teacher. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not asking for information on a parent necessarily, but certainly parent involvement through attending a conference would be maybe data that could be stored here. But those are the two critical aspects, and I'm not seeing a lot of that within the data that we're collecting. Going back to what we can collect on a teacher and whether we can measure the effectiveness of a teacher, and if we can, and it's number two behind parents, shouldn't we be doing that?
Ms. Wagner.
Madam Chair, Representative Barrett. The slide that I showed you about linking data actually has the answer to that question. We collect a lot of data about teachers. We know what the certification is. We know what the preparation is. We know what the renewal units are. You know what they're doing in terms of, you know, some staff development. If you call renewal units staff development, once we get into being able to link things, I think we can start looking at what are the maybe more qualitative factors that impact good achievement. But I think the Bush Foundation study is really interesting because they're looking at teacher preparation and if you have a particular program in teacher preparation and lining them up side by side and saying this teacher preparation program has these outcomes as opposed to this one, and giving us some hard data to say maybe we need to tweak our programs. And I think the same thing happens with classroom teachers. I mean, I think we need to take a look at, we have teachers in this district who are teaching, I don't know, this kind of English, and the test scores are low. What's going on? It gives us some clues to go in and look at the more contextual variables that we might not capture with this system, but we might not have an indicator to go look in that particular spot absent these kind of data. So I think any data at the state level is always going to give you broad indicators, but we need those broad indicators, I think, to validate and kind of hone in some of the more qualitative sorts of exploration that we need to do.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wagner. Now we'll move to our next presenter, Amy Rogstedt-Gadira. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you. Good morning, and my apologies for my disruptive late delay. Who knew that a little ice could cause
I think you
delay?
Did just fine.
So sorry about that. It's an honor to be here today, and thank you very much for focusing on data.
And please introduce yourself for the record.
I am Amy Gadira. I am the founding executive director of the Data Quality Campaign, which is a national nonprofit organization. Which works with policymakers in every state in this country to improve the quality, the accessibility, and most importantly, the use of data, and especially longitudinal data, for the goal of improving not just system performance, but most importantly, to have an impact on improving student achievement. I'm here in that capacity as the executive director of this national group, but equally important, I'm here as a parent of two Minnesota elementary school students, so I have a vested interest in making sure that Minnesota's education system is as great as it can be, because I'm a customer of that system, and it's an honor to be in front of my own representative, Representative Depke, so good morning, Vice Chairwoman. And I also want to start with Representative Baird's question in terms of why. Why are we collecting all this information? And one of the things, I'll answer it not only as in terms of for system, but also as a parent. For so long in education, we have collected so much information, and it's been useless. It has been used for basically being part of a compliance system. And we are on the cusp right now of changing the conversation in education to truly be an information-informed, a data-informed enterprise, which can change everything. And if you pick up the newspaper, I mean, the Star Tribune's been writing some fascinating stories on the use of data, as you saw a couple Sundays ago, on crime prevention. That every other industry and successful organization and sector in the world is using information now to change results, to inform decision making, to provide greater transparency. And in education, we're just now getting there, and we can't afford not to use this information. And that's really my message today, is that, as you just heard from Kathy, Minnesota and the rest of the country is increasing the capacity right now of what we collect and what we're able to do. But if we don't go the next step and actually change the culture in this state and in our communities about how we access that information and how we use it and how we change our behavior daily in terms of making decisions, it doesn't matter how much great stuff Kathy's doing at the department in terms of creating a data system, because it's just a bunch of data and information sitting in a data warehouse and in files over there, and it doesn't make a difference. So as a parent, what I'd say is when I walk into that conference, I care about the system working, but what I really want to know is how are Jane and Ann Gadara doing? And are they on track to be successful in this new global knowledge-based economy? And in the old days, we don't know that. As a parent, I'd go in, I'd see a report card with a bunch of numbers and letters on it that had no context. It didn't tell me anything. It didn't do anything. And what we just saw from this presentation is that we now have the ability, thanks to building a state data system, that individual districts and schools can now put their information in a broader context and provide every decision maker in the system, especially parents, especially teachers, and in fact students themselves, provide them information about what does this matter for me? How does this change how I make decisions that are best for my family, that are best for the kids in my classroom? And as a taxpayer, how do we make sure that we're using our money well? So my answer to your question is, these systems will provide greater transparency, they will provide richer accountability, they inform continuous improvement efforts, and they reduce burden, because all of a sudden by having an electronic system, we don't have to keep re-entering information, which also questions the quality and the use of it. But most important, it's going to help every single one of us, no matter if we're sitting where you all are as the policymakers in the state, sitting as a parent, sitting as a teacher, we will each be able to make better decisions for our children and for the state because we have access to this information. So that, and I'm hoping through my presentation to give you some data points about what's happening around the rest of the country, as well as some opportunities in Minnesota to make sure that that promise actually gets actualized, because we're in an amazing place right now. And I applaud you all for putting data so early in the session and talking about it. So thank you very much, Madam Chairwoman. So DQC, we've been around for 5 years, and when we launched, our goal was to have a very measurable goal. We wanted every state in the country to have a longitudinal data system in place by 2009. What I want to show you, and I think Carmen also has copies of these, and you all have packets in front of you. When we launched, what you see here in this packet, and you have in your materials, no state in the country had what we considered a complete or even near complete longitudinal data system. The darker the color, red means that you have all 10. There were no political statements being made with those color choices. It was before CNN chose them. That red means that you have all 10 of the essential elements, and these elements are aligned to the competes elements that Kathy just showed you. Those competes elements were actually written into federal law based on the data quality campaign 10 elements, and so that's the connection between those two. And what this map shows of last year's survey results, so we survey states every single year. We've made these surveys for 6 years to show the status of state longitudinal data systems. And just to be really blunt and define it, even though you've just had an hour conversation, these state longitudinal data systems provide the ability to follow individual students over time, which is a critical change and a critical capacity building. The good news is huge numbers of states have made amazing progress in building these systems. It's an incredible public policy story and talks to the political will at all levels of our government of making these investments and making this a priority to get this information into people's hands. The great news is, and I want to draw attention to the red star, we're about ready to release the survey results from this past year. On February 16th, I've put an information in your packet giving information about that national webcast that will happen. And we will be so pleased to announce that Minnesota, for the first time, will be able to report having all 10 elements. So congratulations. And I don't mean to steal their fire, but I figured it was a good opportunity to highlight that Minnesota is going to join several states that are now have added 10 elements. And the news here is that allows a wealth of things to start happening in Minnesota. And so congratulations to Minnesota for making these investments. But as I mentioned earlier, they will be for naught unless we also change human behavior about what we do with this information. To provide a little bit of background on this, we talk a lot about accountability. It's going to be a huge part of conversations here in our own state capital, in state capitals around the country, and especially as we go into the reauthorization of No Child Left Behind, which is looking increasingly likely this year in D.C. As I mentioned, in every single ever since there's been money flowing down from federal capitals and state capitals, we've had data flowing the other way because that's the compliance system. You need to report data in and get money to come back out. But what we've always gotten is information that really everyone knew in education wasn't that useful because no one really looked at it. And so as a result, the quality was pretty low. It wasn't worth much. It didn't do much. And we all just kind of got along and went along with it, realizing, well, we don't really make information. We don't use information anyway to make decisions in education because it's not really that great of quality. So why do we bother with it? And we were in a nasty little circle that we could never get out of because no one trusted the data. It wasn't useful. It wasn't timely. It wasn't in context. And therefore, we didn't use it. And we didn't make decisions based with data. Where we are right now in the system, and a large part due to No Child Left Behind, which you can love the law, hate it, think it needs to be reformed and changed, but it changed forever the use of data in education, because for the first time ever as a result of that law, we had information about cohorts of kids. We were able to see, break down information and say, how are certain groups of kids doing? You may not like the measures that went along with it, but for the first time, we had information on the front pages of local newspapers saying, hey, did you know that X number of kids aren't doing well in our system, that we're failing these kids, we're not doing well with them? And as a result, we had a better sense of the sense of accountability. How are we doing? And I call this the rear view mirror of data. We were able to look as we were driving and say, how did we do? Where have we been? What did we do well? What didn't we do well? Which is really important and has been a major change in the last 10 years in education. But if we just stop with that kind of accountability measure, we're missing the true leveraging of the power of data. If we don't take it to the next step and talk about using this data for continuous improvement, which means how do we take what we learned from the data analysis of how we did and use it to change what we're going to do going forward? And that's using data for continuous improvement and not just grading people or looking back and saying, yep, that school did great again, that school didn't do so well, that teacher's not serving her kids. And instead say, how do we take that information, analyze it, and use it and change what we're doing so we don't repeat the mistakes, or we learn from what we're from schools and students and practices and curricula that are doing well and getting results, and how do we learn from them and replicate it across our state? And this is where we are right now, is this focus on continuous improvement. And I'll be really blunt. In Minnesota, here's our opportunity. We've built the data systems. You have put the money, the time, the political will into building the data systems. We're now at a point of saying, how do we transform the use of data in our state to now focus on getting every single child in Minnesota ready for college and career? We have the technical skills to do that. I'm not a techie. I'm not a data person. I'm a policy wonk who cares, and a parent who cares deeply and our kids being successful. And I know we can't do that without using the information that we're now able to collect in Minnesota. So this culture change that we talked about, and Kathy ended with this ability, we don't want to keep beating people up, but we need to acknowledge the fact that in education, people have seen data as a hammer. It has been used to hurt people. People go, oh, here comes the scores again. Those test scores are going to just catch me. And there were reasons for that test score and blah, blah, blah. And there are all these reasons. We're in the midst of a culture change as we move from this kind of hammer mentality to how do we use it as a flashlight? How do we focus on this idea of using information in richer accountability, not just a single test score, but looking at multiple measures? How do we look and say, how are we doing? How can we do better? And how do we use that information to help us all be successful? It's not a game of gotcha. It's changing the conversation. But to do that conversation change, we need to change the culture in education to have people see data as one of the most important tools that we all have in our arsenals.
Representative Greiling, did you want to ask your question now?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes. I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Amy.
Okay.
Gadara.
Ms. Gadara.
Ms. Gadara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The hammer and the flashlight and so forth, I'm wondering, Ms. Wagner testified that in Minnesota we do not have statutory authority to use data as a hammer and, you know, put the names of individual teachers in the newspaper as they've done in California and so forth. How many states do use the data in that way as a hammer? And then what is your or your organization's position on that, singling out individual teachers connected with their student data and making it public?
Ms. Gadara.
Thank you very much. I don't know how many states I can get back to you. And also, our whole position is states are going to do different things depending on the culture of the state. And that's the value of having our state system and federalism, is that in one community, it may be very, very appropriate to list the names of the teachers in doing that. And this is the conversation that we are having in this country right now. The dirty little secret in American education is that parents who could afford to sit at swimming pools in summertime knew which teachers were not doing well in the school because the moms would talk and they would know, do not let your child be in Mrs. Brown's fourth grade class. She's not a good teacher. Mm-hmm. So in lots of ways, you could argue that the publishing of teacher information in the LA Times, you know, as much as there could have been more information put around it, whatever, that's an equity issue, that all of a sudden everybody had access to the same information that a few parents, because they could talk or they were involved in that, they had the time to be involved in the PTO or they were in the school. But this is a conversation that is really important for policymakers to have. And I want to underscore that. Policymakers and our communities and our parents and our taxpayers to have this conversation about what information is important for us to make decisions. And Kathy made this point that in Minnesota, this whole conversation of the teacher-student link, that the technically, we can do that. I mean, Minnesota is getting credit right now in the DQC survey this year that the technical link to be able to link teacher and student information is there. This is not a technical issue. This is not a technical conversation anymore in Minnesota. We have the technology to do it. But your question speaks amazingly to the point of the hard and honest and good conversations that need to have in communities across this country about who needs to have access to what information and why. And so I'm not going to take a position as an official person. I have a position as a parent, and I'm sure you all do too, about what information you have. But I'll tell you, as a parent, I want access to that information. I want to know which teachers are most successful in my kids' schools. I want to know which ones have continued not to add value on my tax dollars and are not producing an impact on student achievement. For all kinds of reasons, especially because I don't want my daughters to be in that classroom next year. So I think it is a question, it is a hard discussion, it is going to be one that we have, and there needs to be a sense of fairness about it, and there needs to be an open conversation. And I'll note that, you know, both the teachers' unions have joined onto the data quality campaign because they know these conversations are happening, and they need to be at the table and be part of this conversation. So hard conversation, but the time to have it is now. And I think that this kind of hearing is the way to start it. So thank you for doing it.
Follow-up, Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just make a comment then. I think it is important for parents to have information, and I also think it's important that it's used as a flashlight.
Absolutely.
And not a hammer. And I think putting it in the LA Times is a hammer. And I will also say my daughter, for instance, works a long work week. She does not have time to sit around the swimming pool, but she certainly ferrets out through other means who are the better teachers, and she would also be the one to read the newspaper. So if we would use having this, because she is a journalist, but if we would use this as a way for equity for parents who wouldn't know, you know, they might be the same ones that might not read the newspaper either. So I think there's ways to make sure all parents have a chance to see the flashlight without turning data into a hammer, which I think the LA Times did.
Right. And
Ms. Gadara.
And just in response to that, I think there's another piece that oftentimes in this teacher-student data link conversation gets lost, that so much of the focus has been on merit pay, or on value-add provisions, or on some kind of assessment of teachers. But the other real value that, if you look at materials that I put in your packets on the teacher-student data link, of this ability to link teachers and students is the ability to also say, how do we help our teachers be more successful? Mm-hmm. How do we tailor our professional development? How do we provide that feedback that Kathy also mentioned back to our schools of education to say, wow, this school is producing incredible graduates. Look at the impact they're having on student achievement. Let's figure out what they're doing there and figure out how we translate that and get it across into all of our schools of education in Minnesota. So again, that's the flashlight piece of it. It's not just putting names up there, and then you can argue that piece. But I don't think anyone can argue that we have never mined the ability to say, with the teacher-student data connection, how do we then figure out how do we help every single teacher be successful? Because we can tailor that base. We can tailor based on what we're knowing about what the data is showing as well. So that's a really important part of the conversation we can talk about.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And of course, the tension is that in order for any of this to be valuable in a democracy, it has to be public.
Absolutely.
But with that, the downside, of course, is what my friend Representative Growling raises, which is there are people in the public who want to do things with it that have probably less to do with enhancing and advancing, in a progressive good way, public education, but I guess, you know, where I might differ a little bit with my friend is that I'd rather run that risk to make sure that democracy has the public information. I have several very quick questions. When data quality does its evaluation, is it important when we look at these elements that the states have these? Are you measuring whether we have these on the books or whether we're actually doing this? One, are you measuring whether or not the data we're collecting is valid and reliable, or it's just any kind of data? Yep. Two, and then three, tell us a little bit about the caution of depending on techies, if you will, to design the system versus policymaking to design the system. Because my understanding is that you can get two totally different systems depending on who's driving the bus.
Ms. Gadara.
Yes, thank you. Great question. You're taking all my last slides, so we'll just all my punchlines.
Yeah.
There you go. All my punchlines will be up. First of all, the survey that we've done is we are all about transparency, the data quality campaign, and measurable goals. And so if you go on our website, which is on all of our materials, you will find there all of the survey results, including Minnesota's every single question that we do. We actually don't do any of the work on the survey. That's not true, as my staff would kill me right now since we're doing a ton of work on it. But actually, everything, we're just basically reporting self-reported pieces. So Kathy actually is the person whose name, phone number, email is listed on the Minnesota survey results. And how that works is that we figure transparency, if Kathy's name's on it and that people read this and say, that's not true, we can't do that, they're going to call Kathy. And our whole view of our survey, and I have the results right here for this past year, and literally if you link on it, you can go through and see Minnesota's answers on every single question for the last 7 years that you all have done this. You can see the progress, see what the impacts are. But what we found also is that this survey, like any kind of data point, is not the end of the conversation. It should be the beginning of the conversation. And so why we want to have this survey result being so transparent is we want people to look at it and say, wait, we just passed some laws on this. What is that translating to in terms of our ability? So what we give credit for is that it's being implemented. So that when that's one of the negotiations we're having right now with states. We actually just did a series of phone calls with Kathy last week saying, hey, you know, can we do this? And we actually just gave credit literally, I think, 48 hours ago for Minnesota having the teacher-student data link because of some changes and the course code piece because of some changes that happened in the last couple weeks. So our goal is not to play a game of getcha. It's a we want to be able to highlight exactly the progress that every single state is doing, and we highlight the survey over the year. So we're trying to provide as transparent and accurate and timely an assessment of where each state's data system is at any time. Here's the question that you had about the public piece and about seeing this and about the policymaker piece is absolutely critical. What we have found across the country working for 6 years with policymakers is that there has been incredible frustration with data systems because people are talking past each other. That in so many ways these systems have been built by technological experts, they've been built by data geeks, they've been built by people who are techies. And oftentimes, because this wasn't the most sexy of issues and not many policymakers wanted to talk about it, that there was very little direction about it. It was kind of talked about in general. And so the systems were not really built for use. And that's the opportunity that I'm talking about today, is that we now have a chance to say, how do we ensure that this system is maintained and built and expanded and used for use? And the critical piece for this use piece is to say, to really do these stakeholder groups and to talk about who needs to have access to what information for what purpose and what is critical and how do we prioritize what we collect and how do we make it public. This is the critical set of conversations to ask and to have multiple conversations about, because the other issue is there's a cost for every single data collection. There's a cost in terms of the risk of privacy. There's a cost in terms of the pure cost of just collecting. There's the burden cost of going on to local schools and districts to actually input the data. And so people, all of us, need to be really clear about why we're collecting this information and what we're going to do and how we prioritize what we do with it. And that needs to be a very public and very transparent conversation, because we can't afford just to collect everything in case we might need it. And also, that's not the right thing to do. But it's your question is absolutely dead on in terms of the opportunity right now is for policymakers as representatives of our citizenry to say, what is it we need to do and why do we need to do this? And how do we also make sure we're not just collecting this information, but we're ensure we're adding value to it, analyzing it, and getting it back into the hands of people to use it?
Well, Madam Chair, if I could follow up
quickly. Representative Mario.
It seems to me, and I'm speaking a little bit out of ignorance because I don't know the methodology that you use in your evaluation process, but it would seem logical to me that given the emphasis on ownership and awareness and use by policymakers, that entities like you, like yours, also interact with legislators about, you know, so it's not just a call to the Department of Education is what I'm saying. And of course, you know, in legislatures, in states, there's constant tension between the executive and legislative branch. But at the end of the day, I think all of us would agree if we're sober enough that, you know, the goal is to have broad ownership of whatever policy there is. And so it's great if one branch has it and can tell you, you know what, we're collecting that data and we're using it. But if Chair Erickson doesn't know that, or Chair Erickson isn't using the data, then we're not driving policy in our state.
Absolutely, Representative. And that's for one of the reasons in the last three years, we have sent out copies of the survey through all of our partners. So the NCSL, National Conference of State Legislators, is one of our partners, and we've encouraged them to get that out into the chairs of every committee. We've sent it out to every governor's office. We've sent it out to the state higher education executive officer for that very point of saying, well, there needs to be one person whose name can go on this and be the point person for the collection. It needs to represent Minnesota's state data system. And so for the first time next year, we will actually be sending the survey to the governor's office and tasking him or her with getting the view across the state, because we're talking about P20W data systems, and so it can't just be sitting in one agency. It needs to be a much broader governance view. So absolutely, your point is well taken.
Representative Peterson.
I'm going back to being a little more specific. With about 70% of our moms in the workforce, and you have the P20 system, have any states really done a good job of analyzing or collecting data on these preschool programs? And if so, what kind of data are they collecting? And or are they just beginning the process as we are here in the state? Do you have any information on that?
I do. And
Ms. Gadara.
We do. And in fact, I would also commend to you that we are releasing the first annual pilot survey on early childhood data systems on March 10th. And our information is on the website. The Data Quality Campaign helped launch a group called the Early Childhood Data Collaborative, which is a collaborative of seven organizations that are building off of the model of the Data Quality Campaign. We put out a booklet. I'm sorry I don't have a copy with me, but if you go on your website or I can send you one, that lists a set of 10 fundamentals on early childhood data that are built off of the Data Quality Campaign 10 elements. And we have surveyed states against it, including in Minnesota. A survey was done, and I can also get you everyone in Minnesota who answered that survey. To Representative Mariani's point, it was a broad-based collection, so we had multiple agencies responding to this survey. We're trying to practice what we've been trying to do of getting the cross-agency take. And so we'll be reporting out on those surveys. But what we're finding is this question of what does get collected, and Kathy acknowledged this, in terms of at what point do you start getting a kid into a system? Is it at first touch? Is it when they enter the public system? What system? And these are, again, these hard questions that are not technical issues, because we can do it technically at any point. It's a question for us as citizens and as you as leaders of those citizenry to say, how do we make a decision when we do this? What systems do we want to connect? How do we get these systems to talk to each other? And you'll see in the materials that are online of our piece, we think Pennsylvania is a state to watch. They have one of the most amazing systems in being able to really connect. They have some incredible cost-benefit analysis in terms of how do you link services, how do you get greater efficiencies, also effectiveness, Connecticut as well. So there's some wonderful examples that we have listed in all those materials that I can send to you. There's a lot of opportunities. We're hoping with the Federal Department of Education grants that they will continue to focus on the early learning and the P20 and greater coordination of the education systems and the early childhood systems. So there's great national movement on this. And there was also just an amazing opportunity with the Head Start reauthorization, as you all probably know, that every state was tasked to creating a data committee as part of that reauthorization. And one of the key things and messages that we're trying to get across in these data conversations is how do we ensure that this early childhood data committee is not a silo by itself over here and then you've got your K through 12 system over here, and then your P20, because then it's useless. It needs to have these systems that are able to talk to each other, able to link with one another, and at the same time, I need to say with everything, ensure that personally identifiable information is protected at all times, but that people who have a reason to know and to link information systems have access to that so they can serve that family and serve that child. So I'm happy to talk to you after about other examples, but there are exciting things happening, and I will also, if it's appropriate, I'm happy to send over a box of those brochures that we just put out on the Early Childhood Data System if that would be useful to you all.
Thank you so much. Ms. Gadara, we only have about 20 minutes
left. I'm sorry.
Left,
okay,
we'll have to speed
I will go very quickly. Well, as you see my
well, not too quickly.
Sorry. So really quickly, we've touched on a lot of this. The key thing here was when we had the campaign after 3 years, and we found that states were making these incredible investments in building their data systems, but they were treating it like a checklist. Check, check, check. Yep, we're done with data. We can now collect all this information. Woo! And now what we're saying is, no, it doesn't matter. And so we then launched the second phase of the campaign, which focuses on how do we, again, this conversation, how do we link these data systems to ensure that we get the richest information, being able to serve individual kids and tell us more about how our systems are working together, how they're aligned to make sure that every child's ready for college and career readiness. This is the key point. How do we change the way that stakeholders have access to information? It does not matter if this information is collected if nobody can have access to it and see it. But again, access means personally identifiable information is only accessible to those people who need to get it, which means the student themselves, the parent, and the teacher. Nobody else in the state needs to have access to information about Jane Gadara other than those three people in her life. And that's the key piece that Kathy kept saying, too. When we're talking about access to information, is access to aggregated, de-identified information for system performance. But for individual performance, as a parent, I want to know, yes, it's great to know about how Minnesota schools are doing. I want to know how Jane Gadara is doing. And that we need to provide that access in Minnesota so that parents are empowered to make the right decisions for their kids, and that teachers have the tools and the information that they need to do their job to help individual kids. And finally, it doesn't matter if we provide access, if we link these systems, if people don't know how to use this information. And this is this entire capacity building. And one of the things that worries me is that we are now that we've got access to this information, it's here, we're going to expect miracles to happen because the data is out there. It's not that easy. We have not trained our teachers. We have not trained our community leaders. We have not trained policymakers. We've not trained teachers how to use this information effectively, responsibly, and efficiently. And this is a major piece of it. What I want to show you now is this country has a long way to go. As I said, on February 16th, we will do an update on where the country is in terms of taking the actions necessary to change those conversations. Minnesota last year reported they had 3 of these actions underway, and I'm actually right now going to show you your results that we will be releasing on February 16th. You don't have them in your packets. You have information from last year, but if you tune in on February 16th, you will get an up-to-date live webcast from the museum in D.C. of showing the state of the nation. So in Minnesota, the red ones are the ones that you all report, that Minnesota is reporting having the ability to do. And I'm not going to read these to you, but what you can see in these 3 areas of linking, that Minnesota has created the sustainable support. As Kathy said, we have legislation. We have leadership like you all sitting and talking about these data systems. We have this incredible governance structure, which I need to highlight, that we have been using as a national model. We have been taking that P-20 data charter governance and using it in our materials and saying, watch what Minnesota's doing. They are doing some great things at getting conversations to happen across sectors. So just to let you know, we consider Minnesota a leader. Also, with this linking piece, the DQC gives out a Policymaker of the Year award every year. We actually recognized in 2007 Commissioner Segrin and Commissioner Hegard as the State Policymakers of the Year for the work that they were doing to make these systems more compatible and talking to each other to truly talk about how do we use our data systems to ensure the feedback loops and to ensure that our systems are working together to ensure alignment and college and career readiness as a goal across the system. On the ensuring that data can be accessed, analyzed, and used, Minnesota is creating progress reports with student-level data for educators, students, and parents, and providing these materials at the system level as well, so aggregate as well as individual student, and we can talk more about that. And then on the capacity building piece, Minnesota has built this research agenda, as you see through the P-20 governance structure that Kathy showed. But what I want to show you on this next slide are things that the Data Quality Campaign thinks are issues that and items that Minnesota should start focusing on. to truly leverage the and have greater impact on what's happening. And I do want to walk through these a little bit. One of the pieces are, and Kathy talked about this, is this move to ensure on the P-20 Council and in your conversations that we also bring in the workforce data. That college and career readiness means we have to make sure that our school, that our education entities are sharing information, but also the majority of kids are working. They're working while they're in school, that not only K-12, but they're also working after the school, while they're going to school. And as you all know, this is not a linear conversation. No longer do students go through lockstep. It's a churn. It's a swirl. We're working. We're going to school at night. We're stopping for a little while. We're going back. We need our data systems to be able to capture that richness of the experience that people are bringing to have that make sense. Second of all, we need to continue in Minnesota to build out this data warehouse that Kathy talked about and that this plan implementation of 2013 is absolutely vital, and it's very, very important in terms of having this repository of information. But again, as we move to the second piece, how do we make sure that people have access to the information in that repository? And while there's this teacher portal that Kathy talked about, this focus on ensuring that parents and students themselves have access to this information is something that must be a priority in Minnesota, because until parents and taxpayers see value in these data systems, no one's going to be clamoring at your door as the folks voting on budgets to say, save the data systems, when there are going to be some hard decisions to be made about what needs to be cut in Minnesota to balance our budget. And we need to ensure that these systems provide value continuously to taxpayers in Minnesota, to teachers and parents. And one of the most important ways that they can provide value is to make sure that information is getting into their hands. And finally, this big chunk of to-dos on the capacity issue is how do we ensure that teachers that we're training teachers to use data. And some very specific things. And again, I've put in your packets a lot of the work that we've done on this capacity building of teachers piece. But it's how do we make sure that we do have the information flow in Minnesota of connecting teacher schools of education with following the students into the graduates of those schools into their classrooms and following the impact that they're having on student achievement, and then reporting that back to schools of education so that they have the ability to change what they're doing and get and have their graduates be more successful. It's also making sure that we provide training and professional development, but also that certification and licensure in Minnesota is dependent on teachers proving that they know how to use information and access information. So I can go into a lot more if people have conversations on that. But just real fast on some issues that I encourage you all to think about as you continue as policymakers to prioritize what's important in Minnesota. Five things that I encourage you as policymakers to think about. This governance structure is critical. Please continue to build on this fact that you all are the ones in charge of this data system and need to direct what happens and need to make sure that the system is working for your needs and that that's a governance structure. You all need to be managing the system. And providing coordinated advice to all of the different agencies in this state that are working together to build a data systems that can talk to each other. You all are the place that this conversation needs to have in terms of dictating and mandating what gets collected, what gets shared. Second of all, how do we establish common data standards and architecture? That does not mean a unified data system. What it means is how do we ensure that these systems can talk to each other and make sure that the efforts that Kathy's talking about with the SIF work and the XML and all of the different systems are able to talk to each other, and that we're not wasting money by duplicative systems because they're talking past each other, but that we're able to build in Minnesota systems that can talk not just agency to agency, but also state and district talking together. And as the culture change continues, that state agencies start talking to districts as customers, it's really important to think about how do we reduce their burden and not make sure we're asking for additional data requests because our systems are not, the fire hydrant and the hose don't fit together. Third of all, how do we ensure that privacy is protected at every single step of the way? I cannot overemphasize how important this is to ensure that Minnesota has up-to-date confidentiality, security, and privacy policies, because this information is sensitive, and we need to assure all players in this, all stakeholders, that we as a state are doing everything possible to ensure that privacy is protected. The DQC will be hosting a national meeting on this issue on March 16th. There's information on our website. It will be a webcast, and we'll be putting out new documents and tools on state-by-state privacy laws and national laws. We are also expecting an update from the federal government on the FERPA laws, which is the family privacy laws, and we will be doing a lot of analysis on that too. Fourth of all, how do we continue to build understanding and demand for this information? And the only way we're going to do understanding and demand is if we get people this information in people's hands. And finally, how do we plan for sustainability of this? And the only way that these systems are going to be sustainable is if they add value. And the only way they're going to add value is if they meet people's needs, which goes back to the beginning of our conversation that these are not data systems built for data people. They need to be data systems built for policymakers, for parents, for teachers, for students. And that, I think, is the big task that you all have, is how do we ensure in Minnesota that we take these great investments and make sure that they work for us. And my concluding comments is we are incredibly well positioned in this nation, and especially in Minnesota. Minnesota has one of the longest, richest longitudinal data systems in the country. We have money coming in from the federal government. We have leadership, thanks to you all. And we have an opportunity to make this work. But the piece is the political will is there. We're having the conversations, the hard conversations that we've not had to date. We have a strategic window of opportunity. But the real piece is this is not an IT issue. This is a political will and a policy issue. And again, I thank you all for the opportunity to talk about this. And I really thank you and applaud you all as my representatives and my policy leaders for thank you so much for making this an important priority issue in this session. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Gadara. Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much for presenting the data and really recognizing that data is very important to helping our kids achieve. Spent about 15 years of my life mining data, analyzing data, and reporting on data to achieve effectiveness in the organizations I've worked with. But I'd like to introduce an analogy and get your thoughts on that analogy. To me, it's like a car that maybe Ford might produce in which they're trying to understand safety, car safety. So in looking at that three-dimensional car, they look at all aspects of it. Two critical components of safety would be the tires and the brakes. And so using that analogy in education, going back to my thoughts about how critical parents are and how critical teachers are, I would argue that teachers are the tires and parents are the brakes. Do we have a three-dimensional look at data so that we can, it goes back to your thoughts about making sure we have the right data and being able to mine the right data for policymakers to help achieve goals.
Ms. Gadara.
So do you think we have the right data for parents to do that?
Madam Chair. Yeah.
Yes, Representative.
Yeah, I'm wondering, if since parents and teachers are so critical, how much can we, do we have a three-dimensional look at education when it seems like we have difficulty understanding the data around parents and data around particular teachers to help us understand whether that car is safe or not safe.
Right. Ms. Gadara.
So meaning in terms of more than just test scores and a richer view and a 360. So there's some really interesting things happening around the country. One of the ideas that's being posited is a student backpack idea that have the student own their own data, so you have all these systems in place, but also how do you make it so that just like a student has their own Facebook page that they can collect things, that you then could say all the programs that you're involved in, Boy Scouts, different pieces, programs, that there's a richer picture that also can be used, but it's managed by the parents and the students, that starts to get a richer view of what's happening, but that they then control who has access to what. But in some cases, it's this idea that then that becomes a portfolio and almost your personal academic progress piece. That also is great for college admissions and also kind of your virtual resume in some ways that captures this richness of what's happening. So there are all kinds of interesting things happening that are providing a richer view that data and technology are allowing us to do. But I think a key piece of this is how do we provide access that people know how to do this? And also there's just some creative ideas. So I'm not sure I'm getting at your question. So
Representative Barrett.
Let me rephrase my question. I think if there were 10 critical factors that lead to a high-quality education, mm-hmm. I'm suggesting that parents and teachers would be heavily involved in those 5 to 10 factors. Is the data we're collecting allowing us to get to those critical success factors?
Okay. So I think...
Ms. Gadara.
So in terms of the context, so is that...
Content.
So when I go in, the analogy I use all the time, when I go into my parent-teacher conference in my schools, the last couple of years, they could have been the same conference that was happening in 1952 because I wasn't being provided any data. For the first time this past year, all of a sudden there was some context. All of a sudden I was given a test score and said, what this means is that Anne, in relation to other kids in Minnesota and the world, there was all of a sudden context and information, which to me is priceless because it's the ability to put information into context. It's not just a data point in time. So I think that's what you're getting at, that it's not just throwing information with an Excel spreadsheet, but how do we provide the information so people So what I call is it's turned into actionable information, that all of a sudden I could walk out of that conference and say, wow, Anne needs to work on fractions, you know, and here are four websites that I can then go to as a parent and work on to help with fractions with my child to make sure. So I think maybe I'm not getting at it. Sorry.
Representative Barrett.
That's okay. So,
Representative Kiefer.
Sorry. Thank you for your presentation. Is there in the data something where you could collect which parents show up to a student conference, a teacher-parent conference? Another thing might be, were they student-teacher-parent conferences? I've been to some of those as well, and those are a little different because sometimes they're not as frank or honest.
Ms. Gadara.
So, thank you. Sorry. So you're actually asking, can we collect information on parent involvement? Okay. So, this is basically your system. You all can do anything you want with it. I mean, you are in control of this system, and technologically, you betcha we can collect this information and we can do it. The question is, at what level is it appropriate? Should that be something that's collected at the school level? Should it be something that's collected at the district level? Do I really want the state knowing how many times I was in the school as a volunteer? Not sure. Am I okay with my principal knowing it? Yes, because that's what I'm doing. So I think, again, this is one of those hard questions, but not hard in a good way. They're the right questions to be having, which is, okay, data is powerful. And when you start aggregating and knowing how involved parents are, it's critical. I just took part in a conference in D.C., with the Department of Education and the Harvard Family Research Project, and they just put out a paper, which again I recommend to you, on using data for family engagement. And it's exactly this issue of how do we also change the nature of family engagement and the role of parents by involving data in that conversation. So it's a really great conversation of, again, the chicken and egg of you'll get greater parent involvement if you actually provide them better data, and you'll get better data if you get better parent involvement. But again, the point is, If Minnesotans decide it's important to start capturing information about parent involvement, that decision needs to be here, not at some technological conversation. And there are places that are doing that. Kentucky is doing a whole lot with looking at parent involvement and parent placement, and I know that they're collecting information at the local level on parent participation.
Are there any other questions? Thank you so much, Ms. Gadara. Wow, this is just eye-opening for us to not only hear from Ms. Wagner, but then to hear from you some of the really down-to-earth things that we should be thinking about as policymakers. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And I have packets, and I have more materials, and I have cards also, and I'm happy to have any follow-up conversations and to really answer your question, Representative Barrett. If I still didn't get it right, I'm happy to continue the conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much. Members, the meeting is adjourned.